Mark and Karen very genuinely loved each other, but they were just so busy. He was a lawyer, she was a surgeon. When they were younger, they imagined a home together with children and lots of wonderful things that they enjoyed doing together. But first, she needed to establish her career. He needed to make partner. So here they were, halfway through their 40s, and nothing had changed. Still renting in the city, still without children, still pushing just as hard as when they were new hires. As they neared their goals each time, their goals grew just a little. So they were always a few years off. And worse, they had grown accustomed to not seeing each other. It seemed like it would only be for a few years at the start, but here it had been 20. They had an ironclad rule. They had dinner together once a week, but they were always so tired, they really didn't even enjoy it. They both longed to leave it all behind and just live. Do the things they wanted to do and do them together. But the bills have to be paid, so you got to go to work. Today we come to the fourth command. And choosing to read, incidentally, the fourth command, right? If you take the number four, right, and turn it upside down, then it looks like a chair for you to sit down and rest, right? Going back to that mnemonic that I gave everybody a couple weeks ago. So the fourth command, when we choose to read all of the commands, not as God's warnings about breaking his rules, but if we read them as God drawing near to us with his passionate love to bless us with what we can't even imagine for its goodness, then I believe that the fourth command about keeping the Sabbath is really what it comes down to, is God giving us the freedom to pursue what is most important and most satisfying in life. Freeing us to do that by promising that he is the one that's in control of all the rest. My story about Mark and Karen might have you thinking about the need to reprioritize your marriage, and that's a good thing. But the real story is about our love relationship with God. When we turn to God, we imagined that we were setting out on this deeply satisfying life of walking in close fellowship with Jesus, right? But 20 or 40 years in, are we actually making time to maintain and develop that relationship? So this is Exodus 20, verses 8 through 11. That's Exodus 18. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the seventh day and made it holy. The word of God for the people of God. So, in there, 8 through 11, verse 8 is the actual command. That should be, well, back up a slide here. This should be the one that is, there we go. Yep. So, verse 8 is the actual command itself, right? And then verses 9 through 10, that's basically an explanation of what was just commanded. And they were to keep it holy by refraining from work that filled the other 6 days. And the explanation goes on to make it clear that they were not only to stop their own work, right, but they were not to force anyone else to work either, right? They were to rest and to allow others to rest. And then third, in the verse 7, we're getting kind of off here. Are they in the right order? There we go. So then in verse 11, we have the reason, right? The reason or the basis. And interestingly, this is the one place where there's a significant difference between the two versions of the Ten Commandments, here in Exodus 20 and then in Deuteronomy 5. Here in Exodus 20, the reason for the Sabbath is that the Lord himself rested, right? It goes back to creation, that he himself rested and blessed that seventh day, setting it apart. But in Deuteronomy 5, the reason or the basis for the Sabbath, the emphasis is more on the fact that they are to allow their servants and their animals and others to rest because they themselves had been slaves in Egypt. They themselves had been mistreated, and so they were not to do that to others, right? So in my story, Mark and Karen were getting paid well enough that they didn't see themselves as being mistreated, but in fact, they were being mistreated, right? By having bought into this whole system that requires them to work 70 hours a week, 80 hours a week, just to maintain some kind of perceived level of human dignity, right? Important words here in the command include Sabbath, right, which literally means to stop something like work, and holy, which means set apart as special or different, right? The command itself in verse 8 uses those two words, right? It just uses these loaded words, keep the Sabbath holy. But then the explanation goes through and clarifies that the Sabbath is going to specifically refer to that one day in seven, originally Saturday, and that holy, or set apart, was going to mean set apart from all the things that fill up the other 6 days, right? From that and to the Lord. So, noticing the different threads that come together in the wording of the command, we see a couple of things right away. First of all, because the Sabbath rest is rest from work and to God, right? Because it has those two directions, rest and worship are intertwined, right? The most obvious way is that good worship is restful, right? We've all had that time when you're just burdened and you go and you spend a good 10, 15, 20 minutes in prayer with God, and you come away rested, right? Gathering together and experiencing real worship, it lifts you up and it sends you out with some internal battery charged, right? But more profoundly than the idea that good worship is restful, the intertwining of rest and worship means that choosing to rest can be an act of worship. Okay? Now, the only rest that some people know is when they push themselves to exhaustion, then collapse on the couch and fall asleep worrying about the things that they still need to do, then later wake up to jump back in to the frenzy, half guilty that they took a nap. Okay? That is not the rest that is an act of worship. The rest that can be an act of worship is when you still have a long list of things that you know you could do, but you have that sense that you're being called to leave it undone for just a little bit in order to give your attention to something more important, like your spouse, or your child, or your friend, or just the joy of being alive in a good world that God has given us. And so, heeding that call, you close the laptop. You put down the tools, and you allow yourself to be unproductive, but loved and loving. And particularly, you can do that because you know that when you stop working, God's still in control. And that he gives you your life as a gift, whether you are working or not. Right? To go to sleep at peace with all that is undone is an act of worship when the peace is rooted in our trust that God is in control and will take care of us. Okay? Second, the fact that the command involves not just receiving Sabbath rest, but also offering it to others is a reminder that there's always a social aspect to everything. There is a social aspect to everything. Okay? I am not expected to be a machine running at 100% efficiency. And I shouldn't expect anyone else to be. If the person ahead of me in the checkout line at Shaw's knows the cashier and stops to chat with them for a few minutes, I can wait. Because that right there is what life is all about. And I don't want them to miss God's good gift. Even if I'm feeling a little bit annoyed. In the Old Testament world, the Sabbath was literally every seventh day, Saturday. And as you probably know, how they were to cease from work and rest was spelled out very, very exactly. With a tendency over the centuries towards longer and longer lists of more detailed prohibitions. Now, because Jesus' teaching always directs us to understanding the intent of God's commands rather than just blindly holding traditions, we have to at least be open to the idea. This doesn't mean that it will be different, but we have to at least be open to the idea that we are called to keep our rest holy in a different way than the Old Testament Jews. Okay? Jesus didn't change everything, but he changed enough that we have to be open to the fact that something changed. Okay? And if this was the main point of the sermon, a lot of different verses that we could go into about wineskins and we're going into it. So the question then is, what is the Sabbath for us and how do we keep it? Historically, there have always been some Christians who believe that nothing has changed. The Sabbath was Saturday and the Sabbath is Saturday. Those who gather to worship on Sunday might still be saved, but boy, are they wrong. Okay? The very earliest church actually believed and wrote about that the fact that Jesus was raised on the first day of the week, not the seventh, was because or meant that while the seventh day was the day of the original creation, right, the day that the Lord kind of finished that and did it, the seventh day was symbolic of the first creation. Jesus' resurrection on the first day meant that the first day was the day of the new creation and was therefore a more fitting Sabbath for the new covenant people. Okay? It's not simply that Jesus' resurrection was more important than creation, although that's true too. It was specifically the idea that there was one creation that was solemnized in the old covenant, and that there is now a new creation with a new covenant. And that was connected with the first day. So for some, Sabbath observance was shifted to Sunday. But the basic idea didn't change. Okay? This view that the day changed, but how you observed it did not, okay? That's still out there in a lot of forms. Okay? Now, there is a third view, which is that the Old Testament Sabbath day was a type. Okay? Now, I'm going to ask for hands. When I say type, who knows what a type is if we talk about biblical types? Okay? This is a really important word, and even if you don't know the word type or typological or typology, you know what it is that this means, okay? A type is like a symbol, but more, okay? A type is something that is real, but it foreshadows something more real and more important in the future. Okay? So it's symbolic, but a symbol isn't real in and of itself. Whereas a type, the original, is itself also real, but looks towards something even more real. Okay? And of course, that's like everything in the Old Testament. So, in this view, that the Old Testament Sabbath day was a type, in this view, the coming of Jesus means that the literal Sabbath day has been superseded with what it represented, which is the spiritual rest and worship that now fill all our lives as we walk in fellowship with God by the agency of the indwelling Holy Spirit. Okay? This is my view. And you may disagree, and you will be able to find theologians of much greater fame and expertise than me that will agree with you. But this is genuinely my view. Okay? It's also the view of whenever you hear people speaking about Sabbath rest, not as a day, but as like living in healthy rhythms of rest and work that cement and reinforce our dependence upon God. When people speak about Sabbath as the way that you do life, that's their view. That's coming out of the typological view of the Sabbath. Now, I take the typological view, but I will be honest that I do so uneasily. Because when we no longer have that day marked in red on the calendar, the definitions become very wishy-washy. And it becomes very easy to say that you have good Sabbath rhythms of work and rest and worship, when in fact, you don't. I freely confess, I have a problem with this. Okay? Pushing back on the kind of a legalistic definition of the Sabbath and granting myself what I believe Scripture grants me, namely the freedom to have Sabbath as permission to pause from productivity in order to enjoy God's gifts, I then fall into bad habits and don't make use of that freedom. I don't end up pausing other than the collapse on the couch. I believe the Sabbath that we are called to is a set of wise principles about how to live life and not just simply rules of what we can and can't do. But I know from experience that we tend to profess wise principles that we do not, in fact, execute. So while I don't believe that a literal Sabbath day is commanded of us, I do suspect that choosing to keep a literal Sabbath day is a much better practice than not keeping any Sabbath of any kind at all. So, often a set of rules, while not commanded down upon us from on high, a set of rules can actually be useful. A set of rules about how and when we will keep Sabbath can be a good and helpful thing in learning to change the way that we do things, right? Not a command, not a rule, not a law, but a discipline. So if Sabbath is to infuse all of life, how do we do it, right? What are the do's and don'ts? Because historically, the tendency has always been to make lists of do's and don'ts, right? And even if we know that we're free of the lists of do's and don'ts, and we say, ah, but you know what, I need some discipline, the first thing we go to is, what am I going to do and not do? We humans like to do things that way. Rules are simple. And once you draw those lines, then as long as you don't cross the line, you get to do whatever you want. One of the things that people like about rules is that if I make these borderlines, then as long as I stay within them, I get to do whatever I want. Okay? And there's a real danger in that. We think of legalistic people as being like the ones like self-negating or whatever, but there's actually, in legalism, there's a strong element of, I'm still in charge, right? I obey the rules because when I stay inside the rules, I get to do what I want to do, right? Whereas the whole ethic of Jesus is all, how he saw and lived life was all about, no, we submit our very selves to God, okay? Now, Jesus' ethic of the heart allows us to see that call to pause work and spend time with God, not as a new set of rules, not a new set of do's and don'ts, but as a question of priorities, and then permission to pursue those priorities, even as other things urgently scream, I need to be done. I need to be done. I need to be done. Right? So what is most important in life? Hopefully, we all first think of our relationship with God. That even the other most precious things lose their meaning when God is not at the center of it. But then following that relationship with God, your relationship with your family, right? Your parents, your spouse, your children. Beyond that, relationships with friends, and then the things that you enjoy doing, right? Behind the simple command to not work stands God's desire that we be able to enjoy his good gifts, that we be able to enjoy the things that he has given us. Himself, first of all, and then all those other things that make life good. The Sabbath, you may know, if you know the Old Testament well, you know that similar to the Sabbath, they're not called Sabbath, but they're in the same basket, where all these other rhythms, like the Jubilee year, the Sabbath year, the Jubilee year, all these, the new moon, and all of these rhythms involved God's promise that when they stopped working, he would provide for them, right? We see it most clearly in the Sabbath year, every seventh year when they couldn't plant, right? And God promised in year six, I'm going to give you such a harvest that you're going to take that seventh year off and you're going to be fine, okay? And you see similar promises of God's provision in all these other rhythms. The Sabbath is God's promise that we can take our hands off the wheel from time to time because he's the one that's always holding it anyways. We work. We don't work because we have to feed ourselves. It appears that way. But in reality, God has promised to meet our needs. And we work because he's also told us that we should work. And so when he tells us to stop work, we don't say, but I need to eat, right? We trust him, and we can stop working because we know that he continues to work. The Sabbath is God's promise that we can take that time to rest and pursue what is most important because he is the one that's in control. To go back again to Mark and Karen in the example, they went into those jobs thinking that those jobs would provide for them, that those jobs would give them the kind of successful, comfortable life of abundance and opportunity that they wanted one another to have. And that when they were young, they wanted to give their children that they looked forward to. They probably said things like, this will allow us to travel. We'll be able to send our kids to the best schools. This will give us the means to really enjoy life together. But they didn't get any of it. because they ended up being enslaved. And similarly, God has given us the world to enjoy together with Him. But too often we are too busy with what we think is important in order to even notice what is important. As people commonly say, the urgent blinds us to the important. People's lives and their choices and what choices are available to them are so different that I really hesitate to try and spell out what this looks like for you, okay? When I'm in my study in the course of the week and I'm writing, I try to think about trying to make things as concrete and specific as possible. And honestly, I don't think I do that very well. I think I rarely get to anything real specific. And one of the reasons is when I stop to think about how this specifically works out, I think about you. Sometimes I'll pull the directory out and I'll think of six or eight different people and think, what does this mean for them in their life? And over again, I come up to, I don't know. Okay? So I hesitate to spell out what this exactly looks like for you. But you know what? I expect that most of you have a sense of what a first step might be. And I suspect that you've known about it for a long time. And I also expect that it involves some sort of small but difficult change or sacrifice. It's worth it. It's worth it. Make time for God. You know what it is that you've been wanting to do to make more room for God. You know which discipline it is that you felt like, oh, this is what I need. Even if you have to be a little bit legalistic about it, even if you need a rule that's going to simplify that decision-making process each morning, it's worth it. Make time for God. Make time for family. It's worth it. Make time for friends. Post-pandemic, as I've been talking with people, the one thing I'm hearing over and over and over again is I need to reconnect with people I care about. We did pretty well with our families. We did not do well with our friends and relationships, community relationships. Make time for friends. Make time for yourself. Because you are one of God's good gifts to the people that know you. And to give them the best you, you got to take care of yourself. Self-care is not selfish. Self-care can often become selfish, and there's a lot of selfishness that passes under the guise of self-care, but real good self-care is not selfish. And because most of us are so bad at making time for things that are important, like I said, you may need to craft a rule for yourself, right? But here, basic advice on crafting that rule, keep it small. The place where you want to be in 5 years from now, don't craft that rule. Do something that realistically you can do for a week. Start small, and then the other piece, tell people about it, right? If you're going to try to make this one small change, tell your spouse. Tell a couple of your friends. Tell your pastor. That's what he's there for, right? Not that they're going to call you up and hold you to it. This isn't about external control. But just knowing that other people know about it really helps you to commit to it, okay? It puts it outside of yourself instead of just remaining in your brain, and then you think, well, did I really commit to that, or was I just thinking about it, and right? Tell somebody, and then you know that, yeah, I decided that. It just helps you to stay honest with yourself. And why? Why do we take these steps? Because just like Mark and Karen really missed each other. And by missing each other, I don't mean just they feel like they were missing someone. They missed each other. They passed by each other and life was over, it was gone. And you probably miss God. And more than just the feeling, you might be missing God. The newlyweds step into their hotel room, and as the young man closes the door, his new wife, who has been the very image of propriety and shy reserve for a year, steps up to him with her eyes and voice full of fire and says, "You are mine." But remembering something urgent, he says, "Hold that thought, honey. I just got to send a couple of emails and just get this quick thing done."